I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo! Check this
out. All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. If you're looking for a safe space, if you're an independent thinker out there looking for somewhere that you can go and not be insulted and not have your intelligence insulted, you found the right place for 2 hours a day, every weekday from 9 to 11 o'clock. This is a safe space for you independent thinkers out there. Today is Wednesday, so that means next hour we're going to move on into natural health topics. My segment, Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. And today we are going to have a Mississippi physician on to weigh in on medical marijuana. It is my opinion. I am for this measure. We don't fix things with elections very often. We change parties. We change faces. We seem to be mired in many problems. This seems to be one chance we've got to at least positively impact the lives of over 100,000 Mississippians suffering from some of these chronic conditions that are listed in this bill. Anyway, we're going to get a physician's take on it next hour. As I would imagine, that's people want to know. Doctors will be involved in this process, and so we've got somebody on to talk about that. Get through the news today. Today we've got a statewide tornado drill, and I find this to be kind of interesting. Maybe a bit of a teachable moment, because I wonder why they're having a statewide tornado drill. I may be cut off at any moment now as they run the sirens, I believe at 9:15 today. We're not even sure if they're going to cut into the radio station or not, but if they do, we step aside. We have no control over that. When these warnings come, they take over our airwaves. So at 9:15 today, they'll do the alarms out there. So if you hear the tornado drill alarms, you know it's a statewide drill. But you've got to ask yourself, in today's day and time, why don't they make this a mandatory drill? I mean, why do they want to allow people the choice to participate in this drill or not? Because seriously, do they not want, are they wanting people to die? Shouldn't you be forced to participate in this drill? I mean, you know, because this is a public safety issue, isn't it? A public health issue? And I think that everybody that's driving at 9:15 today, when you hear these tornado sirens going off, in order to be ready, to err on the side of caution, to take your safety seriously, make sure that we minimize the number of deaths here in Mississippi, you should immediately pull your car over and crawl into a ditch and lie there. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I mean, doesn't this seem, I mean, in today's day and time, doesn't it seem like the government is there to keep us safe regardless of the imposition that it has on our lives? And I believe that making people pull over and get into a ditch, making every single office discontinue, I don't care if you're on that sales call about to close a big deal, you get off that phone, you get under your desk into an interior room. And if you do not, I believe it should be a $500 or $1,000 fine. And if you don't pay that fine, they're going to put you in a cage. Because it's public safety. It's public health. We've got to save lives. If you don't participate in this tornado drill today, it's just because you want to see people die. If you are listening to this show, or if you're out there right now and at 9:15 when these sirens go off and you're in a mobile home somewhere, you need to leave that mobile home and find a safe structure. Because the government loves you and wants to keep you safe. That's the only reason they're imposing this. Failure to leave a mobile home at 9:15 today and find a safe structure and in an interior room will result in possible arrest and certainly a fine. Now, see, this drill, what they're doing today, is the right way to do it. It's for informational and educational purposes, as should always be the case. They're going to lead a statewide drill. They've announced it. Teachers will go through with students and show them what to do. to my knowledge. Now, I'm sure the schools are probably forcing this to happen within each school district, but I don't know that if a school didn't participate or a business doesn't participate, nobody's going to be fined or arrested. Even though it might be in their best interest to take just a few minutes out of their day-to-day and practice what would happen if a tornado came in your office building, getting your entire staff in an interior room. If you really want to be safe in this life, it's good to practice these things, but we're not going to force you to. See, this is one of those instances where the government just gives you some best tips, practices, allows you a chance to, you know, to role play the event. And then they just let you live your own lives. They've given you the information. We're all familiar, right? Interior rooms, no windows, out of mobile homes. If you're in a car, get into a ditch. We know these things, right? But we're not forced. When a tornado warning goes off, I mean, seriously, in this day and time, should we impose some fines? If you're driving down the road and a tornado warning sign is going off, I'm not talking about today during the drill. I'm talking about the actual event, the real deal. Should you not be at risk of getting a fine or a ticket or a possible arrest if you do not pull over your car and get into a ditch? Because, again, it's about saving lives. Do you really want to overwhelm our hospital system with a bunch of tornado victims? No, see, this is something we've been doing for decades since we've had these warning systems out there. We inform the public of the risk. We monitor it. The government alerts us if they see something, as do the private television stations. And then we make our own choices. And you know what happens every single tornado season? Somebody dies. Tragic. Tragic stuff. Sometimes unavoidable. Someone might do everything right. They get into an interior room. They huddle down. They cover themselves with something secure, but the tornado just hits them dead on and they die anyway. It's absolutely tragic. That's life on a big blue marble hurtling through space. But they just arm us with the information and then they allow us to take our own precautions and react as we will. And we still do lose lives because there is no guarantee of safety. The government will never be able to guarantee your safety, at least when it comes to tornadoes. So far, fingers crossed, knock on wood, they don't force us to take their precautions. They just educate us and then treat us like adults, able to react in the case of an emergency and make our own decisions. It's just, I think it's a bit of a teachable moment. I hope I haven't given anybody any ideas. I hope Thomas Dobbs doesn't come on air at 9:15 and roll out some new draconian policies that force us to participate in the drills and force us to dive into a ditch anytime there's a tornado warning signal. I don't want to give him any ideas. If he gets singularly focused on the danger of a tornado the way he has gotten singularly focused, and I mean singularly focused, he has ignored all other possible consequences from all of his COVID measures of lockdowns and social distancing and masking and everything else. If he starts to do that same thing with tornadoes and ignores everything else that could possibly be wrong with enforcing tornado rules, then we could see him claim the mantle of power when it comes to bad weather situation. Anyway, I think it's a teachable moment. This is how you handle a potential danger. You advise, you give out some best practices, and then you leave the people the hell alone to react the way they want to when they see the danger coming. Sure would have been nice if they did that with coronavirus. I'll be right back.
You know that friend that's eating healthy, or as they put it, eating clean? They're overly concerned with eating habits, especially yours. They cite the latest health studies, the ones that change weekly. Eggs are good, no bad. No, wait, eggs are good. Instead, maybe you should listen to what your own body is saying about your health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
Now I'm calling all citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling.
bailed you out when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
I ran across a story yesterday that I thought was odd for a strange reason. I saw this picture. I was looking at another news story, and you know, when you watch one, another one pops up. And I saw this news story. Let's see if I've got the clip pulled up here. I may just play it. And I'll tell you just why I found it was odd. You may have seen this. Apparently, this went a picture went viral on Twitter. And since I'm not on Twitter or any social media, which we will discuss a little bit more coming up, more evil uncovered at the social media companies as I try to lead my Smexit movement here on the Mike Madison Show. Social media exit. Everybody needs to get off. But apparently something went viral yesterday on Twitter that I found interesting for an odd reason.
So it looks like Bill Cosby is cracking a smile in his latest mugshot. Take a look at this. Cosby, now 83, was photographed for the first time in nearly 2 years at the maximum security state correctional facility in Collegeville. The prison periodically takes new photos of inmates because their appearance can change, and Cosby was due for a new photo. Cosby is serving a 3 to 10 year sentence for sexual assault.
Now, so there's a new mugshot of Bill Cosby out there. The reason I found this odd was I thought, well, we still haven't seen one of Ghislaine Maxwell. We got two. Bill Cosby's still in prison. We have at least two. I think I may have seen three mugshots now of Bill Cosby as he's gotten arrested, processed, and is still in prison. They're still taking mugshots of him and releasing them out to the media. Hell, it's going viral on Twitter. Ghislaine Maxwell, haven't seen a single image. Again, Mike Madison at WYAB.com. If anybody has a picture of Ghislaine Maxwell after her arrest, because I still, as much as I've searched, have not found a single image of her incarcerated, I'm starting to smell a rat. I'm very interested in this election for reasons different than everybody else. A lot of people want to see Trump defeated, rid of this monster in the White House. And then the other half want to be saved. They just think if we can get Donald Trump back in one more time, he's going to save us all. And see, I'm not in either one of these things. I'm just interested in it almost as a psychology experiment. And I have to say, I really cannot figure out exactly who's going to win this election, which makes me also very odd in that most people that I talk to are very sure. I mean, they're very, very sure. Either Trump is going to win the White House in another massive landslide. I see people saying it's going to be the biggest landslide in the history of the United States, which is odd to me because Ronald Reagan, within my lifetime, took 49 states, except for what, Wisconsin, wherever, was it Mondale was from? He lost one state, and I can't really see Donald Trump picking up New York, California, Illinois, some of the more drastically blue states. But anyway, everybody's so sure, I am not sure. The Democrats say there's a blue wave coming. You see a lot of headlines right now, blue wave. Now, nobody trusts the polls unless the polls tell them what they want to know. I mean, what they want to believe. So polls are no good if they go against us. And this is for both sides as well, particularly for the Trump supporters, because the polls typically are showing right now that Trump's behind. I don't trust the polls. They quite obviously were very wrong in 2016. It could be very wrong again. I have a lot of people tell me why they're so wrong. But I don't know. Even if they're wrong, I've seen no evidence that Trump is out ahead by 70-80%. But anyway, it's very interesting. So I did a weird thing that most people don't do, and I apologize. Maybe I'm somewhere on the autism spectrum. You know, I get an idea in my head, and I actually start following it and I try to find facts on it. Now, that's very odd in society now. As I say, maybe I'm on the spectrum somewhere. But I believe that ultimately, when I look at this election, as I try to parse through it, as I try to figure out what's going on, who's going to win this thing, out of curiosity, I figure most people vote. There's the committed people. Some people just hate Donald Trump. They will vote Donald Trump out even if it hurts their life. Even if they have to pay higher taxes, if they have to support the Green New Deal and have the economy decimated, I mean, they will vote against their own best interest just to get rid of Donald Trump. Ditto on the right. People that are on the right, Trump supporters, they do not care what Donald Trump does. It does not matter what Donald Trump does. If he betrays a campaign promise, if he flip-flops on something, if he rolls the military out with a vaccine and forces everybody to take a needle in the arm, they will still vote for Donald Trump because they believe Donald Trump is the savior of this country. I'm in neither camp. So I look at it and say, well, but there's a lot of people in this country that probably aren't as invested as the bases, as the anti-Trumpers or the always Trumpers. And so what are people's real lives like? And so I did a little bit of research this morning, curiosity. I hadn't looked at this. I think I've done this before. But I know the hyperpartisans don't really want to hear this kind of stuff. But I just looked at the numbers. I was curious particularly about what the economy was really like heading into COVID, because I believe that's going to hold sway in a lot of states, particularly battleground states, where there have been manufacturing gains or losses over the years. And I would imagine that people that get jobs, see an improvement in their lives, probably will tend to vote for the president that they give credit to for improving their lives, because they're not hyper-partisans. They're not all in for Trump or all against Trump. They just really are trying to figure out, hey, is this working for me? And they go vote that. It's probably, for a lot of people in political radio, you're so dogged in your... It almost doesn't matter what our lives are like. It's the promise of what it would be like if our team got in. But for a lot of people. So I looked at the numbers. Now, this may be a bit of a trigger alert to some people, but I wanted to look at manufacturing jobs in the United States. I was curious. The idea is that Donald Trump led a manufacturing renaissance in this country. Now, we're not talking so much about Mississippi, but there have been new manufacturing jobs in Mississippi. I know Continental Tires built something, but I'm looking at some of the big manufacturing states, your Ohio's, your Michigan's, your Wisconsin's, and saying, okay, well, let's just see if this manufacturing renaissance actually took place. The last kind of peak before manufacturing jobs started really being shed, I'm going to give you some numbers here that'll be a little hard probably on radio to keep up with, but I'll give you some percentages that are small and easy to digest. So we can actually take a look at what has gone on with manufacturing in this country, manufacturing being one of those things that can bring people into a solid middle-class lifestyle. This is what we have lost. And Trump is right. A lot of bad trade deals and a lot of offshoring of jobs, these things have decimated manufacturing and the middle class in this country. Now, again, I say the people who made those deals were not stupid. They knew exactly what they were doing. And the donor class has made billions and billions of dollars ever since they started doing this. The middle class has suffered. The latest peak before we really started a pretty bad trajectory of manufacturing jobs was in November of 2000. At that point, we had 17.287 million manufacturing jobs. 17.287. The Obama low, this was after the Great Recession, was all the way down at 11,453,000. So from 17 million down to 11, almost 11.5 million. That was from between November of 2000 and then the Obama low, I'm not sure, it was in January of 2010. This was after the Great Recession. When Obama left office, there were 12 million. Okay, his low was, he actually started off better, but it was in the Great Recession. And I'm honest enough to say I can't lay any of the financial problems at the very beginning of Obama's administration on him. I mean, he did inherit the greatest recession. I don't like Obama. I don't carry water for Obama, but I am kind of honest. And I can see that he didn't exactly create the Great Recession. So when the low was... when he took office, being 11,453,000. When he left office, there were 12,369,000 jobs. So during Obama's term, from the low at the depths of the Great Recession to the time he left office, there were 916,000 new manufacturing jobs created. That's 7.9% growth during the Obama administration. Now, do I give Barack Obama credit for this? No. I give the entrepreneurs, I give the manufacturers, I give the businesses that hired these people the credit for it. Manufacturers, businesses generally, hire and survive and thrive in spite of politicians, not because of politicians. They do it in spite of the government, not because of the government. This is why I can't stand when politicians come out and say, we created certain numbers of jobs. No. The people who risk their capital and their time, those are the people that create jobs. So I do not give Barack Obama himself any credit for this, but it is the fact that during Obama's administration, from the low after the recession again, till the day he left office, he created, or they, see, I almost did it. Not as brainwashed as anybody else. They, the manufacturers, created 916,000 new jobs. So I looked at Donald Trump. And again, I'm just doing this to try to give myself a sense of maybe what some of these swing states feel like. Because down in Mississippi, we get into our little bubble. We don't have a ton of manufacturers around here. We've got our Nissan plant. We've got the new Continental plant. We've got plenty of manufacturers. But, you know, we're not the Rust Belt. We didn't see the big decline. As a matter of fact, Mississippi manufacturing, is particularly in our area, has probably grown some, while I have seen like a lot of textile companies around the state of Mississippi have gone down over the years. But I wanted to kind of get a sense of what has happened in Michigan, what's happened in Ohio, what's happened in Pennsylvania, what's happened in these manufacturing places. So here's the Trump scorecard. When Donald Trump came to office, there were 12,369,000 manufacturing jobs. This is the same as when Obama left. This is in January of 2017. Right before COVID, you can't lay the numbers today are not particularly accurate because I think people will give Donald Trump a pass on what's transpired over the last 8 months. They understand that even though they probably should blame him a little bit for allowing Fauci to stand behind that podium and shut our country down. But I wanted to be honest about this as well and say, okay, let's see what kind of jobs were created during Trump's term. Before COVID in January of this year, there were 12,852,000 manufacturing jobs. Again, I know a lot of words on radio, numbers on radio get a little convoluted. During Trump's first 3 years, there were 483,000 manufacturing jobs created, or a 3.9% growth rate over the course of those 3 years. Now, it's lower now. So the growth rate in manufacturing jobs, but just like I wouldn't blame Obama for any job losses in the first year of his term as he steps into the recession, I can't really blame Trump policies or anything for any job losses that took place because of COVID. Although I got to say, I blame Trump a little bit for the COVID reaction, just as much as I do Tate Reeves or Thomas Dobbs or Anthony Fauci or anybody else. But anyway, what's interesting to me is that that really means that Donald Trump was pretty much on the very, very close same path as Barack Obama in job creation. Right now, there's 12,200,000. So during the course of the pandemic, we've lost about 650,000 manufacturing jobs just during this year. Now, how that translates, I don't really know. But the truth of the matter is, and I always want to get to that, and that's why I actually am nerdy and maybe on the autistic spectrum. When I'm trying to figure out exactly what it's like out in the country, I actually want to look at the numbers and say, you know, that's if there's 483,000 people that got new jobs during the Trump administration, those may be rock-solid Trump voters, even if they're Democrats. They may look around and say, hey, he talks a lot about manufacturing jobs, and I got a manufacturing job, but 483,000 is not a whole lot of jobs. Not when you consider a voting block of, what do we have, something like 130, maybe this year 150 million people will actually cast a vote. That's a pretty small drop in the bucket. But it also brings up the fact, too, that the narratives that are out there are really just partisan talking points. And I've been really curious to know, has there been this manufacturing renaissance in this country? Because I looked at manufacturing numbers, the output of manufacturing, and I know they actually slowed, started to trend sideways, and then down starting in early 2019. I think in March of 2019, manufacturing started slacking up and then coming down heading into COVID. This is before COVID even hit. This was in 2019. Yet the talking point was constantly, the economy is better than it's ever been. I didn't get the number from the actual peak of manufacturing, but that 17,287,000 back in November of 2000 was not even the high. The high was somewhere in the late 1970s and early 1980s, where I think that number might have been over 20 million manufacturing jobs. We're still down around, what's that? Probably about 40-45% from our peak back in 1980. So when you hear this, we had the greatest economy that God has ever seen on planet Earth, it's just factually not true. That's part of the reason that the middle class has done it anyway. I'm always curious to the numbers, how this translates into the Electoral College, how this translates into the states. I don't know, but I don't think it necessarily bodes well or bad for Donald Trump. I don't know that people on the ground have seen this manufacturing renaissance that most people are really kind of banking on. The numbers don't really bear it out, and the numbers are what the numbers are. When I come back, I wanted to look at a couple of things. Social media-wise, Trump had a couple of tweets, but he made a comment yesterday, too. I kind of wanted to throw out there. Look, I'm not trying to tell anybody not to vote for Donald Trump. Joe Biden is scary as hell. The whole Democrat movement at this point is scary. If Donald Trump was running against John F. Kennedy, I'd probably be voting for John F. Kennedy. I'll just tell you right now. But those days in the Democratic Party are long gone. Long gone. The Democratic Party would not even be recognizable to John Kennedy. And I wouldn't agree with Kennedy on everything either. But it's interesting to watch where we've come. They're talking about these budget negotiations or these stimulus negotiations. Stimulus, air quotes here in the studio, stimulus. It's basically bailout, trying to bail out the country. I'm going to make a point about that, but also listen to where Trump's point is. Where does he stand in the negotiations? It leaves me scratching my head. I'll be right back.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
Welcome back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. There's not a whole lot of policy stuff going on right now, really, in Congress. Most everything is about debates. It's about Hunter Biden's laptop, which seems to be heating up some. This will certainly be. I am asking myself, why did they wait so long? I understand the value of an October surprise, but I think the numbers are now maybe 30 million people have already voted. Seems like Rudy Giuliani may have held on to this thing a little too long. This might have been if you want to make it an October surprise, October 1st might have been a better idea. Maybe this should have been a September surprise or an August surprise. I don't know. It just feels like people are already voting. People are already hyper-partisan. If you want to break this story, trickling it out over the 2 weeks prior to the election just doesn't seem to have the impact that it once would have because of so much early voting. But what do I know? I'm just a radical libertarian talk show host in Central Mississippi. But there is talk about the stimulus stuff. I did see that the markets are up today. There's some more optimism about another round of socialism. And so the markets are taking that in stride. And markets are up right now. What I did find kind of interesting, looking at the charts and the movers on the S&P that are leading the charge higher, listen to these. Now, think about this. Just yesterday, I think it was, or day before yesterday, they announced this antitrust thing against Google, right? Now, you would think that this would shake the tech industry to its core if they think Congress is going to get serious about busting up some of these monopolies. The leaders of the charge today at S&P, Twitter. Twitter is up just today. They're up almost 7%, 6.93% right now, followed by Facebook and PayPal. So some of the big tech titans are leading the charge of the S&P higher today. I guess they feel like more stimulus, more taxpayer cash flooded out into the society will end up finding its way there somewhere. But I'm just saying, it doesn't really feel. I think Google did end up down just a tiny fraction yesterday. But it certainly wasn't the kind of thing that if a company thought they were really going to be shaken to the core by an antitrust lawsuit, the stock did not react it. Wall Street just kind of ho-hummed about the whole antitrust against Google thing. We'll see if it doesn't actually have some teeth. But in the negotiations on the stimulus bill, which I am fervently against, see, I'm against the lockdowns and then against the stimulus. Now, if anybody out there has got a chance to get any of the money that the government steals from you on a daily basis back, I'm all for you getting it back. I just wish you would grow a pair and not send it in the first place. That's what we should be demanding.
We should look at this bunch of nut jobs in Washington, D.C. and say, how in the world do you think I'm handing over a quarter, a third of my income to you people? You can't balance a budget. You can't run a government. I mean, you're terrible. You've got a dysfunctional organization. Look, if I was giving to a charity and I found out it was run by a bunch of psychopaths, I don't give to that charity anymore. But anyway, Donald Trump, the big negotiator, came out and made his stance known on this. Again, this is from our tough negotiator in the White House.
Into the play-by-play of the rescue package. It's been 91 days since any type of rescue package came from Congress that you have signed. And we know the American people are hurting. It's been so long. If you're in the hospitality industry, which you're very familiar with, they've been devastated. If you're a waiter or an actor, you've been destroyed. So now we understand that Steve Mnuchin, your Secretary of Treasury, and the Speaker have been speaking for a long time, and something could be offered as early as today. What could you tell us? Because Mitch McConnell isn't exactly on board with those negotiations.
Well, he'll be on board if something comes. But let me just explain that it's very simple. I want to do it even bigger than the Democrats. Now,
what?
Not every Republican agrees with me, but they will. But I want to do it even bigger than the Democrats, because this is money going to people that did not deserve what happened to them coming out of China. Now, to just put it very simply, we want to do it, but Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to do it. We'll see whether or not she changes her mind. But we want to do it because people need help and they should get help.
Well, she's at 2.4.
Even though the economy is very strongly coming back.
Mr. President, she's at 2.4 trillion and you want to go bigger than that? John Thune says
she's at 2.2.
Okay.
And I would be willing to go more, because I think that, number one, I view it differently.
Here
we get the money back. The government, it gets the money back ultimately anyway. And it's better than unemployment, and it's better than all of the other causes.
Okay. So Donald Trump, I mean, I got to tell you, I just was not well informed when I voted in 2016. I was under the idea of, like, we had this businessman and he was a tough negotiator and he certainly would. I've never seen a negotiating tactic where the Republicans are trying to bring the number down, the Democrats are trying to get the number up, and Trump is leapfrogging over both of them and trying to pull the number higher than even the Democrats want. Now, he says in there that it doesn't really matter. The government gets all the money back anyway. Can somebody please explain to me, how the hell does he think that happens? And if that's the case, why not make it $50 trillion? Give every American, what, 10 grand? Now, apparently that ends up right back to the government, so I'm not sure exactly how it's stimulative. I mean, I guess maybe is it stimulative today, but depressionary in a month, 6 months? I don't know. I'm so unclear on this. As much as I study economics, I'm really trying to figure out how exactly the stimulus goes. Because I've looked at tax receipts and everything going into the government this year, and they seem to be down, yet they put out, what, about $3 trillion in stimulus already, so that money hasn't seemed to make its way back to the Treasury yet. But, I mean, do a $50 trillion stimulus bill. Just imagine the effect that would have on GDP. Oh, we'd get a big GDP headline number. Think of all the economic activity if every American had $10,000 landed in their lap. And one of the problems I have with this, too, that I think people fail to understand, is when you bail out the country, citizens, from these kinds of problems because of the bad policies of Washington, D.C. See what I'm saying? You actually are covering up. People need to feel the pain of bad policy to avoid making bad policies or allowing our politicians to make bad policy decisions in the future. When you bail people out, essentially this carries water for all of these draconian lockdown measures. It tries to kind of wash them away. And the next time these kinds of measures come, what Americans should do is they go, you know what happened to me last time you locked us all down? If Americans with a united voice, or fairly united, some people are just hypochondriacs, they're scared to death, scared of their own shadow, they'll lock down. But if most Americans were not rescued, at least, as tragic as it is, this is a shame. We should never have allowed this to happen in the first place. We should have stood up like Malawi and said, no, you're not locking us down. But the fact that we didn't, now, if they try to go out and paper over this thing with a bunch of Fed-printed cash that ends up saddling our grandchildren with tremendous amounts of debt,
when they do that, they actually kind of make it to where the next time they want to do it, we just go, well, I guess the government's going to pay me anyway, so go ahead and lock us down again. You understand what I'm saying? All of these stimulative measures are designed to mitigate the pain of what these people did. We need to feel that pain. We need to be angry about it so that it doesn't happen again. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, what's going on?
Well, it's basically like the government is the owner of Chuck E. Cheese, and they've got us in timeout, yeah. And we're starting to gripe about it, so they give us some tokens. So, yeah, they're ultimately going to get their little things back. They just need us to go play in the corner for a minute while they do whatever it is they got
to
do.
I got to tell you, I like that. We're in a timeout, and they're going to give us a few tokens to keep us quiet for a little bit longer.
That's all it is, because $1,000 isn't going to affect anybody, period. I mean, I don't care if you're broke or not, it's not going to change your life.
Yeah, it's almost funny what it was, $1,200 per person. And, you know, I mean, I guess, what, that didn't last you 6 months?
Why didn't you retire off that?
Yeah, I mean, 12, ooh, boy. 12, I mean, they act like they're doing us a favor. They take $9,000 on average. Every American taxpayer pays $9,000 in federal income taxes. They give us back $1,200. Now they're dangling another $1,200. That's a total of $2,400 in front of the average American taxpayer that pays in $9,000. And we're supposed to be thanking them for this for some reason.
I'm not thanking them, worshiping them.
Worshiping them, yes. Oh, they're doing something. They came together and did something. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it's ridiculous, and the lockdowns are ridiculous. And I don't understand what happened to men in this country.
Amen. Amen. I don't either. You know, I was looking at some of the stories where they were showing. There was a wedding that took place, and the couple went and stood in front of the window of a nursing home. But what's even more tragic is when you see these nurses come out and say, we can't believe that these people are dying alone. These old people are in hospitals, and they are dying alone with no family around. Where are the men that say, I'll be damned if you're going to let my mom sit in that hospital room for a month and pass away without even seeing the face of a family member? You let me in there. I mean,
I can tell you this. My grandparents are getting very old. Very well could be their last Thanksgiving. You're going to have to send the National Guard to keep me and my family away from going to have Thanksgiving with them.
Yeah.
You can kiss it. That's all I can tell you.
Well, can you imagine them on their deathbed and all they want? I mean, you know, passing away is tragic enough, particularly when you kind of realize it's coming. Can you imagine just doing it alone, knowing that nobody that you love can come in and hold your hand? And we have sat back and allowed this. I mean,
no, you're missing it. You're not getting there thinking. They're saying these people are going to die, so you can't go next to them because you might make them die.
Yeah, I know what they're thinking is, but who cares? I mean, that's what we do.
Saying. They're already essentially dead anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so they might as well just, yeah.
Go see them.
Yeah. I'm stunned by it. We can't go to funerals. We can't go to weddings. We can't go be with people.
Dead person. It's so stupid. It's so stupid.
It really is. It's insane. But I agree with you. I think where are the men in this country, I think, is one of the real mysteries right now. I totally agree. I appreciate that.
Great show. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. All right. Got to run to a quick break. We'll be right back.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
All right, just a couple of minutes left in this hour. It's like I don't have the Trump decoder ring that everybody else has. I can't really figure out how negotiating about doing a larger stimulus package than the Democrats do. The problem with the stimulus is just there's just so many different problems with it. But one of the main things is the government breaking your leg and then handing you a crutch is not a good idea. You need to hold them accountable for breaking your leg, not thanking them for giving you the crutch, as Harry Brown famously said. Let me see. Buddy, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Wow.
I get up at early, and I listen to the news on y'all's station. the newest scare technique, and I think it's because people are coming aware of how many people the flu kills annually, they're not reporting, you know, 20,000 or 50,000 or 100,000 people die from COVID. This morning they said that there had been 200 million life years lost. That's the new
Wow. Life years lost. Oh, I like that. Okay. Well, yeah, that's – yeah, okay.
I've been a COVID denier since the beginning. I have six friends and one acquaintance that I know that have COVID. Six of them recovered. One of them was about 150, 175 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
He had COPD. He had unchecked diabetes. Cholesterol was off the charts. He ate like a garbage truck, and he smoked like there was no tomorrow. And he died of COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
Who'd have thunk it?
And I wonder, how old was he?
32 years old.
32?
Yes. Yes, I had known him. I've known him 15 years, and he walked and puffed when he walked. Now, look, I have one demographic that makes me likely to get COVID. I'm 71 years old. I am 6'4". I weigh 202 pounds. I get out and jog 3 miles every morning. I eat healthy. Everything on me is perfect.
There you go.
I work in a public business that is a necessity or essential business, and I hadn't worn a mask since day one.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if people were smart, and people aren't smart anymore, they'd go back and read the history of Nazi Germany, 1925 to 1945, and we followed right along. And when they pull up the vaccination train, people are going to pile on it, and then they're going to pile out and go in and get their shower.
Yeah, I tell you.
We got a generation of idiots.
There is a whole lot of things, you know, I have always wondered. I mean, I think a lot of us do. You look at Nazi Germany and you just think, how in the world did people go along with what was going on in that place and time? And boy, it just seems to be, and it's a whole swath of different examples. Antifa's one of them. There's right and left sometimes. You just look and you go, oh, this is how it happens. This is how people just suspend all reality and just swallow a line that comes from the government, hook, line, and sinker. We're just watching it take place. It does explain Nazi Germany a lot better.
It's either a Democrat or a Republican. It's the ruling class against us peons.
Amen. Amen,
but now,
brother.
Now, one thing they hadn't figured out, there's still a bunch of old dinosaurs like me walking around, and I'm telling you, I don't do masks.
Well,
and I don't care. The governor might as well come and get me and arrest me when they tell me I got to wear one.
Well, Thomas Dobbs, somewhere, he's wagging his bony little finger of indignation at you right now. But I appreciate it. Hey, thanks for the call. I do appreciate
right.
it. About to
Have
run to a break. You too.
Show.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is it's a strange world we live in. The headlines just continue to be more and more bizarre. I always have a lot for my ending of the week segment this week on the crazy train. This week will be pretty easy to put together. But anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk to a Mississippi physician about medical marijuana here in Mississippi. Stay with me.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. This is Wednesday, so every Wednesday we take a little bit of a break from some current event stuff, although today will be a slight exception, and talk about Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. And I start off every show by explaining to everybody, I am not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, not a biologist, not a chemist, not an infectious disease expert, not a doctor, not a surgeon, not a nurse, not a therapist. I'm nothing. I have no certifications to advise anybody on their health. We just talk about natural health approaches here on the show. One of the things that we are looking at coming into this election time is whether or not Mississippians want to allow Mississippi patients with a certain list of debilitating conditions access to medical marijuana. And this runs kind of the gamut from CBD products to marijuana itself. And it's something that I think a lot of people are interested in one way or the other. And so today I wanted to bring on somebody, and actually, while I say I'm not a doctor, I do appreciate the opinions of some, and we've got with us Dr. Philip Levin. He is a Mississippi physician. I wanted to bring him on to talk a little bit about the subject and some of the diseases and some of the science and research behind how medical marijuana can help people suffering from these things. So, Dr. Levin, are you with me?
I am. I'm here.
Well, great. Thanks so much. I appreciate you joining me today. If you would, just tell us a little bit about yourself. You've practiced medicine in Mississippi for quite some time, I believe.
I am a board-certified emergency physician. I have been practicing full-time emergency medicine for 42 years. I'm also board-certified in family medicine, so I'm double-boarded. I've been in Mississippi for 17 of those years, working in Gulfport. I was prior president of the County Medical Society and president of the state chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians.
Wow. Okay. All right. Great. Well, how... Well, we'll just kind of get into it. So you're familiar with the legislation that is part of, now we're going to differentiate this so people understand, there are two choices on the ballot this time. First, you either vote yes or no on whether you'd like to see medical marijuana allowed in Mississippi. If you vote yes, then you have two choices. You have either Bill 65 or 65A. And today we're going to be talking about 65. 65A, I talk about some on this show. This is what was put forth by politicians in the legislature because they want to make sure that they are in control of it. The 65 is actually the grassroots movement of Mississippi citizens who signed a petition to get this thing on the ballot. We're going to be talking today about what I support, which is 65, not 65A. So within 65, can you tell us a little bit about some of the conditions it addresses and maybe some of the research and science that's behind how it helps these patients?
Certainly. The bill was very carefully crafted. The author was Joel Bombar, who's a legislator who felt that his parents, who both died unfortunately of cancer, were suffering because they were not allowed access to benefits of marijuana. Medical marijuana, which is available in many states, 34 states across the country. So he put together a committee of over 100 specialists, public advocates, physicians, lawyers, judges, to develop a very well-organized and specified bill to be sure that medical marijuana would be available for those people in need. These people developed a list, which was approved by the physicians on the committee, of which diseases or symptoms have been found to benefit by research, by qualified research, by medical marijuana. There are thousands of studies that have been done, mostly in other countries because America has been so resistant, but some in America as well. These really do go across the spectrum of different illnesses, and they're all listed on the website of the actual bill. If you go to medicalmarijuana2020.com, it lists all who qualify for this procedure, this medicine. But most of them are related to neurologic issues because that's what medical marijuana affects. It's the nervous system. And so it will help things like seizures, Huntington's disease, Parkinson's disease, muscular dystrophy, post-traumatic stress disorder. There's a large variety and very specified in the bill of diseases which have been proven by medical research to benefit from medical marijuana.
Right. in that list of things, have you seen, you talk a lot about foreign research, and one of the problems we've had here in the United States, as I understand it, is because they have made marijuana a class one substance, it's been very difficult to research, if not impossible for most groups. But so the countries outside of the United States have been where most of this research has come from?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. That doesn't mean it's bad research.
Right. Oh, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And but I think people need to understand that, because one of the talking points against this is that we need to do more studies. This is what I hear the most people in opposition say. We want to see more science. There, more studies need to be done before we do this. They just don't tell you that the government is stopping this kind of research from taking place.
They also aren't willing, apparently, to look at the research, because, as I said, there are thousands of studies that have shown its benefit, and it has a long history. It's been used in the second century BC in China. It's been used throughout history in India.
Right.
It was commonly used even in America before the turn of the 20th century. So it's not that an unknown brand new substance. Right now, as a as an example, we're trying to use very untested medications for the COVID. There are a lot of medications that are not well tested, but marijuana is very well tested.
Right. You talk about it being for neurological. I tell you, one of the most heartbreaking things, and one of the things I've seen a lot of, and I was around, you know, I've talked to a lot of people during the run-up to this campaign and these kinds of things, and in the fact that I like natural health topics, children, and I'm sure adults too, but particularly these children who were born with these seizure disorders, and you see stories, you can see documentaries about this, you can see videos on YouTube of parents talking about children that have 300 seizures a week, and medical marijuana takes them down to either one or none. I mean, it gets these people their lives back. How does it work? I mean, what is it about the compound, the cannabinoids, how does it exactly work that it addresses things like seizures or these other neurodegenerative diseases?
Neurons in the brain and spinal cord area have receptors, and we know a lot of them, dopamine, serotonin. I'm sure a lot of those terms are familiar to your listeners. And another one of the receptors, a lot of them, another one of the receptors is specific for the THC compound, and it is a sedating type receptor, so that what causes seizures is super excitability of the neurons. They start firing all at once, and they do a cascade. So one focal point starts firing, the next one, it's like a wave, goes from there and on, and THC suppresses that, so that even if you have that initial firing, it can control the seizures. That's how it works in most of its disease functions. It is a neurological neuron receptor that it can trigger. Now, it doesn't work for all seizures. It's not going to work for all people or all diseases. But for those it does work for, it's great. People will say, oh, we have a lot of seizure medicines. And it's true. And a lot of people are controlled with the other ones.
Right.
But some are not.
Right. Yeah, and this is the same. So it's kind of the same thinking with things like multiple sclerosis or ALS, these other conditions too. I mean, it's kind of the same thing across the board. This just puts in check this body's overreaction to stimulation.
Exactly. Let me give you another example. We only have two medicines we now prescribe for nausea, Zofran and Phenergan, and they both have side effects, and both of them some people are resistant to. If you have a third one that works very well, like THC does, then why not use it? It will add to our capability of helping people with diseases and suffering.
Right. I think one of the things people don't understand, and I'm not that well versed in it myself, when you talk about, there's two compounds in marijuana, am I correct in that, saying there's a CBD compound and a THC compound? The THC is the one that is has got some intoxicating properties to it. The CBD by itself does not. And the difference is, because we see CBD everywhere now, you know, we've got CBD here. Why does that kind of CBD that we already have access to right now, why does it not work for people, you know, in epilepsy or these other conditions that are not addressed by CBD? How does the THC work in conjunction with the CBD in a medical marijuana state?
Just as we talked about, there are different receptors. There are definitely CBD receptors and also THC receptors. So CBD certainly works. It works for those types of conditions that that it will be susceptible to. It works for joint pain. It works for certain types of other types of issues, like some type people respond to nausea and cachexia, there's loss of appetite. But it doesn't work for the other things. Just like, why do we need more antibiotics than just penicillin? Well, penicillin works for some bugs, but it's not going to work for others. And the same thing is true. Now, it is true that THC has some intoxicating effects. Many medicines have side effects. We use caffeine. It's addictive. We use Benadryl to help with itching and allergic response, and it has sedating effects. So there are a lot of medications that have side effects. THC is true. It has some. But the benefits, we feel, greatly outweigh the disadvantages. And there'll be some people who can't tolerate it. I see people in the ER who come in with bad reactions to marijuana. There's no doubt about it. But that doesn't mean that it should be outlawed for everybody.
Right. And when you talk about THC in conjunction with CBD and some of these medications that are being used in states that have medical marijuana, the THC composition in there is manipulated within each thing. So when you see these children getting things for their seizure disorders that contain both CBD and some THC, it doesn't necessarily mean that the child is getting high all the time. It's just enough to address, to calm that thing down, but it's not... You know, I think most people have an opinion that once you talk about THC, you're immediately talking about somebody that's stoned. But that's not the case on a lot of these medications, isn't it?
That's correct. You have to do dose-oriented treatments. But we have a lot of medications that cause people to feel stoned. You look at the serotonin inhibitors, Prozac and Zoloft. Those are excellent medicines, but they change people's moods. They change their attitudes. But that doesn't mean you should outlaw them. They have effectiveness on people who need them.
Right. All right, we got to take a quick break. We're talking to Dr. Philip Levin. He's a emergency medical doctor and a family practitioner. When we come back, I wanted to talk. They've just announced this morning this $8 billion settlement with, I guess it's Purdue Pharmaceuticals, when we had this big opioid crisis. I want to talk a little bit about how medical marijuana can be used as opposed to opioids and maybe start to mitigate some of the problems we've seen with opioid deaths over the past few years, too. So anyway, stay with us.
Absolutely.
Again. We're talking to Dr. Philip Levin about medical marijuana bill that will be coming up on the November 3rd ballot. Stay with us.
All night with the king.
Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking to Dr. Philip Levin about the medical marijuana bill to get a physician's position on this. Now, Dr. Levin, you've seen the research. You were in favor of 65 of the bill that was put together by the grassroots bill that was put out there by the people. This is, and again, I'll tell everybody, if you want to do this, I encourage you to go to medicalmarijuana2020.com, and you can see all the different conditions that this addresses and find information on that. That is attached to 65, not 65A. 65A is the alternative put up by the legislature. The legislature had many, 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 many tries to try to get a bill that would help these patients in Mississippi that will benefit from medical marijuana, and they never made it happen. The people went around them, and apparently the politicians, in my humble opinion, are trying to get in and wrangle control back from the people. That is what they put together in 65. Personally, I believe it is just designed to completely sabotage the thing. If you're interested in allowing people in Mississippi, the patients who need it, to actually get access, you need to vote for 65, not 65A. That's a long-worded thing. What have you seen in the medical community in Mississippi? What's kind of the thought of a lot of the physicians that you deal with when you talk about this issue?
Well, there's different feelings, just as there is with any issue. There are certainly people who are against it and certain people who are for it. I have many of my medical colleagues who are strongly in favor of it. And there's some who are quietly in favor of it. And there's some who are vociferously against it. And there's a lot of misinformation out there, too, as you pointed out. I just got a note in my mailbox, a little flyer in my mailbox from the realtors getting false information that says if 65 passes, people will be setting up marijuana clinics in your neighborhood, lowering property values. I mean, it's absurd. It's
yeah.
Just scare tactics.
Well, let's talk real quick. I wanted to get into the opioid issue, but I wanted to kind of get this in there, too. The process, the way that this bill works, as I understand it, is Mississippi physicians would not be prescribing marijuana. And like you talked about, when they first put this bill together, they got a lot of input from Department of Health, from doctors, from clergy, from law enforcement, from a bunch of different areas, really. And I think the bill is fantastic. 65 is fantastic. But physicians, and I don't know if this was because they didn't want to be put in a position to prescribe marijuana. The way this works, as I understand it, is that somebody who has, let's just say, multiple sclerosis, they go to the doctor, and the doctor does not prescribe medical marijuana for them. But what they do is they just certify that John Doe or Jane Doe does have multiple sclerosis. It is then incumbent on the patient. The patient can do whatever they want to. They can go after traditional medications for their condition, or they can take that to the State Department of Health and get a medical marijuana card. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. The physicians are not prescribing it. They're just certifying that the patient has a condition that qualifies.
Right. Okay. Well, we're talking about the opioid stuff. Just today, they announced an $8 billion settlement with the opioid manufacturers. Obviously, this has been in the news now for probably close to 10 years. We've seen increasing opioid deaths across the country. Obviously, we have a bad problem of opioid addiction around the country. Is medical marijuana, will it help? Are we trading one addiction for another? Or what's your opinion on how this might help fight the opioid problem we're seeing right now?
It should help a lot. Marijuana has been found to convert people from opioid addiction to marijuana use. And the good thing about marijuana use is it is not addicting. Well, it's not as addicting. It does have a very low level of addiction, much lower than narcotics by far, but also lower than a lot of other common drugs we use. It's much lower addiction than alcohol, caffeine, or nicotine. So there is some mild addiction. But if you want to outlaw medication because of the addiction potential, then you should be outlawing alcohol, caffeine, nicotine as well. The withdrawal is another issue. So we all know if people don't get their caffeine fix in the morning, they get shaky. If people don't, if people stop alcohol abruptly, they can have withdrawal seizures, go into DTs. If people even stop nicotine, they get terrible cravings. But marijuana doesn't have that. It does have some withdrawal sense, but not nearly that potential.
Right. How many overdoses have there been nationally each year of medical marijuana or marijuana products?
It cannot be overdosed.
Yeah.
There is no, it can be, people can take large amounts and get effects from it, but there's no fatalities. There's never been a fatality from an overdose of marijuana versus, of course, narcotics commonly cause deaths from overdose.
Yeah, and so, and why is that? Because in opioids, when you see an opioid death, is that just such a severe sedation that it causes, what, heart or lungs to shut down? Is that what the process is in an opioid overdose?
It suppresses the respiratory drive, so people stop breathing, and so they suffocate.
And that's not possible with marijuana?
Correct.
Okay.
Marijuana does not affect that system.
Right.
It doesn't affect respiration at all.
Have you studied or have you looked at what the statistics are for opioid or any other statistics that you've looked at before and after medical marijuana introduced into other states as to what kind of benefits they've seen or any problems that they've seen?
The studies are not conclusive. I have seen some studies on it, and some studies say there's a drop, and other studies did not find a significant change. So I don't think the answer's in on that. It's probably helpful, but it's not going to be a panacea.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, there a lot of people who would like the effects of narcotics still like the effects of narcotics, and then they're going to, maybe they'll try the marijuana and then they'll go back to the narcotics. So it's not an easy, it's not an easy answer, but it is a possibility. It's another alternative. Like we talked about before, you have a problem, there are other drugs people use for narcotic to try to use to get people off narcotics as well, the benzodiazepines in particular. So it's just another one that people can try to use.
Right. What have you seen other countries, evidence from other countries, or are there other studies you'd like to point to while we've got the last few minutes here of reasons that you think this is something that is worth supporting for patients? And do you have a sense, I mean, do you have a sense of the numbers of people in Mississippi that could be benefited from something like this?
I do want to point out before we even go there that states that have legalized marijuana, even recreational marijuana. I was just in Colorado visiting my grandson, and the use of marijuana actually has gone down when it was legalized. So that's something to consider. To answer your question, I don't have specific studies at hand. I've certainly seen the studies that show marked improvement in many of the conditions that we talked about. The research has been done across the world, and is particularly useful as in the neurological issues we talked about. Epilepsy, and Parkinson's, Huntington's disease, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, but also useful in post-traumatic stress disorder, useful in nausea and pain relief in cancer, and useful for sickle cell disease, and found use in autism, spinal cord injuries, severe muscle spasticities. But most of these things have a trend. It's not going to be useful for somebody, for example, who has a bad joint. Now, CBD can help that. The THC is not oriented towards that. It's a different receptor. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah. Well, and, I think that one of the biggest problems is just the stigma even around the word marijuana. And I think people just don't understand. I think a lot of people believe this is the camel's nose under the tent, and this is just a way to get marijuana in the state. I know some people that I've talked to, I find this an interesting argument. They say, well, if we allow it in here, you know, some people who don't have medical conditions are going to end up getting marijuana in this state. And to that, I say, you're right. It certainly will happen. I mean, I just don't know there's any way around that. But if we go around saying that we're going to deny people access to something that could be tremendously beneficial to them based on the idea that somebody somewhere, and maybe many somebodies somewhere, may abuse it, now we've got a whole laundry list of things that we need to get rid of in our society, starting with things like opioids and alcohol. And I mean, we could really go down a long list of saying things that are abused out there that have great medicinal purposes. We don't outlaw those other things. So I guess it's just, I mean, I assume it's kind of the hysteria around the idea that everybody's going to be running around society high is the only thing that scares people.
But again, people, it's medical. We're talking about legalization of medical marijuana, which is already present, already legalized in 34 states, including Louisiana, Arkansas, and Florida, our next-door neighbors.
Right.
So it's not like we're talking about since only being used in some radical left-wing localized area. This is a medicine. We're not talking about legalization for recreational use. We're talking about opening a chance for people who need medical marijuana to have it legally.
Right. And I think, in our state, I mean, I think it's interesting to me. There's also, recently, this is a conservative radio station. A lot of people are Trump fans here. I applaud Trump and he made a big deal about getting right to try stuff done with some of these pharmaceuticals. When people just are not responding to current medications that are on the table for them, they're able to reach out to some of the more experimental things when they need to get relief because they're in a situation where nothing else is helping. I kind of think this is a lot like this. There are just some people that the traditional medications are not working for right there. They're still suffering, and this feels like kind of a right to try issue, maybe not in a terminal case, but just in getting through the day and alleviating pain and some of these other neurological diseases, that this is almost a right to try issue.
I have a friend who has severe migraine headaches, and she's found marijuana is the only thing that really helps her, and it helps her tremendously. It prevents migraines or it stops them as soon as they start. There's a lot of available uses for this type of medication.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, I really appreciate this opportunity, and I do want to point out, as polls show, that 80% to 85% of Mississippians are supportive of this legalization.
Right.
So hopefully that we'll be able to roll this out in this state, and Mississippi won't be the last on this agenda.
Right. And you're right about that. The polling has been very high for the years that this has been considered while we were collecting signatures. And the thing is that really I think the only thing that threatens this is the legislature sticking in this 65A to try to confuse the situation. I think the vast majority of Mississippians now, they are trying to muddy the waters, split the vote. Essentially, 65A is an attempt to sabotage what is a very, very strong bill in 65. So anyway, well, Dr. Levin, I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for coming on.
Good talking with you, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. All right, we come back. We're going to get into maybe some other health topics. I have a few other words that I do want to talk about, the medical marijuana stuff, a couple other clips along that, too. I think this is a very important issue. It's a freedom issue to me. I think that a lot of the fears around this, if people really would do their own research rather than respond emotionally just to the word marijuana and not allow politicians to frighten you of this, as was said, this is available in 34 different states. And I'm going to tell you right now, each state has got its own challenges, but we have not seen 34 states around the country devolve into some reefer madness insanity in these states. You've got citizens out there, your fellow Mississippians, and we're a compassionate people. We're a very charitable people in Mississippi. With some of the lower incomes around the nation, we are known to give a lot to charity. We're a compassionate society. There are people suffering, and this would help them. 65 has got a way to implement this. They've planned it out. As Dr. Levin said, this was an incredibly well thought out bill with a lot of input from a lot of different people across spectrum. Again, pastors, medical community, the health department, law enforcement, every stakeholder was brought in the crafting of this bill. This was not just a back of the napkin, hey, we need to get weed in Mississippi. That is not how this was done. This was a very well-crafted bill, and it will be implemented to start helping people in Mississippi with these conditions very quickly. 65, no plan for implementation. It will be the legislature's attempt to crush this bill and put it on the back burner and not get this help to people in the state. They passed something on CBD a while back to help. There's a I can't believe I'm spacing on the little girl's name. It was having these chronic problems, health problems. And so they passed this law to get her access to the medicine that would help her. It never happened. She never got it. She's hoping now maybe this bill gets through so that this little girl can be helped. The legislature's 65A is a sabotage bill. It is not a well-thought-out alternative. It was a knee-jerk thing because they did not think that we would get the signatures in Mississippi. They didn't think the people of Mississippi would be able to get together and pass this on a grassroots level. And when they saw it, they said, uh-oh, we better stop this thing. And that's when they put 65A in. 65 is ready to implement and ready to get help out to Mississippians as quick as possible. There's still some bureaucracy. There's a lot of controls. It's a heavily regulated bill. This is not a scattershot approach. This is very, very well thought out and methodical, but they've planned it out going forward. It will actually happen for patients in Mississippi. 65A will not. I'll be right back.
You know that friend that's eating healthy, or as they put it, eating clean? They're overly concerned with eating habits, especially yours. They cite the latest health studies, the ones that change weekly. Eggs are good? No bad. No wait, eggs are good. Instead, maybe you should listen to what your own body is saying about your health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
Now I'm calling all citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I bailed you out when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we're back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. It's Wednesday, so we're doing Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. This is kind of bridging the divide between health and politics, though, as we're talking about medical marijuana here in Mississippi. It's interesting. My reflex is to try to sell this thing to people because I believe in natural remedies for so many things. Naturally, you can keep yourself healthy, but if you have particularly things like pain, PTSD, this is another natural remedy for that. It fits into this show very well. The funny thing is I don't think I really need to sell Mississippi on the idea of this being available to people. Look, we've seen the devastation across the country of the opioid problem. Now, I would not walk into a hospital room with somebody suffering from massive pain that needed an opioid to address that pain from a car accident or any other condition and look them in the face and say, I'm really sorry you're in a tremendous amount of pain, but I don't want you to have an opioid. I don't want opioids to be available to you because somebody somewhere might abuse it. I couldn't do that to a person that was suffering. I would just have to say, well, look, you get your opioids, and we're just going to have to deal with trying to mitigate any of the problems we have ancillary to this. I don't need to sell Mississippi on it. The polling is in. The vast majority of people want this to happen. I think what I need to be more specific about is if you do want this to happen, so I guess I'm speaking to the 75-80% of people out there that do want this to do want Mississippi patients. And again, go to medicalmarijuana2020.com. You can see the conditions that are listed there. A doctor will have to certify that somebody has these conditions, and that person takes that certification to get a card for this thing. It really is a good bill. I'm not just saying that as a libertarian who believes people should have freedom. I'm saying that because I've looked at this bill and I've talked to the people that have put this bill together. I've talked to people around the country who came to Mississippi to look at this and said, holy cow, you guys got it right. They looked at other states, the mistakes they had made, some of the problems they had, and they addressed it in this bill. Maybe being late to the game for Mississippi, it may be a plus in that we were able to see the experience of other states and find a more effective, better way to roll this thing out. This is a good bill. 65 is a good bill. 65A is nothing. It's nothing but an attempt to crush what the majority of Mississippians want. Now, I won't go into the motives for the reasons to do that. I certainly have some, but that's not really for this discussion. But 65, so if you go to vote, this is what I want to tell people. If you go to vote and you want to see patients in Mississippi that are suffering right now, your fellow Mississippians, I'm calling on the compassion of people out there. If you want to see them get some help from something that will actually work and has been studied extensively, I'm going to play a clip about that in just a second. If you want to get them some help, you have to vote yes first. And then secondly, you have to vote for one of two choices, either 65 or 65A. If you really want this to happen, I assume if you don't want this to happen, you'll just vote no. And look, that's fine. I debate you on it. I didn't ask you to do some research and, you know, take a look at the way this has helped. You can go on YouTube and just look at people. There's one clip that's just fantastic. It's a guy with Parkinson's disease. He shuffles to the door to let one of his buddies in. He's just so spastic. His arms are flailing all over the place. He can't speak. And his buddy gives him something that he just wipes a little bit into his cheek. And within just about 2 minutes, his whole body relaxes. He gets up, he sings, and he says, I'm going to the kitchen to fix something to eat. You want something? It gave this man his life back in about 2 minutes. So you can see the benefits of this thing. But you can either vote no, and then you're done. You just vote no, and you move on. If you vote yes, you have one more step to take, and you have to take this step. Don't vote yes and then just go, well, other people know the bills better than me. I don't know, 65 or 65A, I don't know the difference. You have to do one of those two choices. If you vote yes, vote for 65, not 65A. 65 is well thought out, well regulated. It brought in a lot of people to consult on this thing. It is a good bill, and it will help a lot of Mississippians. 65A is a sabotage, a political sabotage bill. I'm to the point in my life where I'm not sure why we listen to politicians anymore. I'm so proud of the people of Mississippi that they stood up and took control of this thing by themselves. The legislature had many attempts. I think I've seen the number 24. I don't know if that's accurate. Don't hold me to that. But it's been a lot of attempts to try to get something in to help patients in Mississippi. They have whiffed every time. They had their shot. The people of Mississippi said, well, we're going to go around you then. This is democracy right there. If you want to see the people speak, this was the people speaking. 65A is trying to crush the people speaking. So if you vote yes, vote 65, not 65A. I'm going to come right back. I'm going to play a clip about studying it because I'm starting to hear. Matter of fact, I heard some on the radio this morning. I had my radio set on a different radio station, and I heard people talking about that you need to give the legislature all of this control over stuff. I'm imploring you people, look, they've had their shots at controlling this thing. They whiffed. They are trying to destroy it. They're not interested in more safeguards or any of this stuff that they're telling you. They are interested in controlling it. They are interested in not allowing the people of Mississippi to do what they want to do. I remember I was out helping get signatures one time here in Bible Belt, Mississippi, standing near a sign that said medical marijuana. I just don't really know how that's going to be received. And it was so interesting. I remember seeing three little old ladies walk by. Cute, cute little old white-haired ladies. Barely walking, almost kind of shuffling. And they were walking by this table. I had this big medical marijuana sign right in front of me and one behind me. And I was, you know, asking people if they wanted to sign this petition to get it on the ballot. And I saw them and I kind of winced. I went, oh, boy, this is going to be interesting. And one of the women looked over and saw the sign, and I thought, here it goes. Am I about to be called some names? Or, you know, what is this interaction going to be? All three of those women, the woman nudged the person, little old lady next to her, and they all turned and came to that table, and I thought, here it goes. We're going to see what's about to happen. They all grabbed a pen, and they all signed that thing, and each one of them said, this would help so many people. They were, I believe, at least one of them was in a retirement home. People will tell you their stories when they sign that petition. I talked to a veteran who said marijuana had saved his life three times. We asked these guys to go off and fight and die in the sand, come back after, you know, tough conditions and tough war fighting, and then we denied them something. This veteran said, oh, medical marijuana, or he just said marijuana. He didn't even say medical marijuana because he gets it illegally. It saved his life three times. And so you hear these stories, but these little old ladies came over and they immediately signed. I just thought that was kind of my moment where I said, yeah, it is time to start helping these people because these little old ladies had seen people that have been suffering from conditions, and they are smart enough to know, look, what we've got right there on the market is not helping these people. They need some help with pain. They need some help with dementia. They need some help with some of these other issues, and medical marijuana will help these people. So it's been pretty fascinating to watch the support for it. Now it's just time to get it right. Vote 65, not 65A. Be right back.
Mike Madison here. Have you heard about Lee Garland's latest offer? You know, he's the real estate agent with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance who will guarantee the sale of your home. Well, he's up the ante once again, and not only will he guarantee the sale, but he wants the opportunity to offer you cash before you ever even place it on the market. That's right. Lee Garland with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance is and represents cash buyers who are willing to buy your home as is today. Can you imagine not having to jump through a bunch of hoops, not having to scramble around to meet the buyer's needs, and not having to do repairs for some crazy home inspection? If so, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424 for more details on his cash offer and or guaranteed sale. Again, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130, 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424.
All right, I've only got a couple of minutes left. I am hearing all of the arguments as we head into this election. You have a lot of high-powered Mississippi establishment politicians coming out and telling you that you need to vote for 65A, and they're giving you reasons for it. I'm hearing these things. Phil Bryant, I heard Michael Guest come out for 65A. These are politicians wanting politicians to continue to control something that they've had the opportunity to control for quite a while. They could have passed something a while back. They refused to. 65A is an attempt to sabotage medical marijuana in Mississippi. If you're for it, vote for 65. Now, one of the things they'll tell you, and I want to play this clip if I got time real quick, they'll tell you, we just need more studies. We need more science in here on this. It just hasn't been studied enough.
Today on the show, we've been asking an important question. If marijuana could be the secret weapon to fighting the opioid crisis, and we've heard how it can work. right? The reason we don't know for sure it'll work in everybody and every time is because it isn't being prescribed by more doctors. And why is that? Because a lot of doctors like me are just beginning to figure this out, and there's not a ton of information to help us. Like heroin, marijuana is a Schedule I drug. You don't have to memorize this, but what that basically means is the federal government doesn't believe it has any medical value, right? Although the government may own the patent, claiming it has value, right? It makes it really hard to study this stuff. I have called personally doctors, researchers, and it's a vicious cycle, right? They can't get money to do the research, so guess what? There's no research to support it. Yet the National Academy of Sciences believes that it works for pain. This year, published that. In states where medical marijuana is legal, listen carefully, where it is legal in those states, there's a 25% lower opioid overdose death rate. That's a lot of lives. People like you.
All right, that's Dr. Oz was doing a segment on this. I wanted to play that because I wanted to tell you, here's one of the arguments. It just hasn't been studied enough. We need more science. We need more time. We need more data. As Dr. Levin said earlier, they've been doing these studies in other countries. In this country, which is captured by the pharmaceutical industry, and our politicians are captured by the pharmaceutical industry, does not want this competition, because if it wasn't effective, pharmaceutical companies wouldn't care. They wouldn't care. But it is effective. And people will tell you that. People who have used it, particularly in these other states, will tell you that. Just think of this game they're playing with you. And this is the politicians who tell you now, go vote for 65A so they can still have control. The control they've had so far is they deny the research. They don't allow companies to research this. And then when it comes out, when the people say we want it, they say, well, you can't because there's not enough research. I mean, think about that trick. This is how politicians have handled this topic. They refuse to study it. They refuse to allow it to be studied. And then they say it hasn't been studied enough. Wow. And this has worked for a long time. I think finally the people have just said, enough of you people. The political class needs to step aside and let Mississippians do what we know is best, better than them. 65 is a good bill. Very well researched, very well regulated, has a system ready to be implemented. It is going to go in and it is going to help people. And it's going to help them soon. Some states languish with these things. They pass them, and it's 4 or 5, 6 years before they actually implement a plan. 65 is ready to go. It's going to take a little time to roll it out, but nothing like 65A has no plan. If you're in favor of medical marijuana from Mississippi, another natural treatment to help people, then vote yes, and then vote for 65, not 65A. Share that with your friends, too, if you're in favor of it. Thanks so much for the time. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.